we're back. Patty, I jumped the gun just by a half a second there, but back with Brian. And Brian, I know you said you were a little apprehensive and nervous, and we're on the last runway sort of thing now. We're, you know, we're good for about 10, 12 minutes, and then we'll be heading into moving out. Are you feeling better?
Yeah, I am feeling better, yeah.
Good, man. I put something in front of you there and asked you if you could comment on it, any aspect of it, and as I told you, what jumped out at me was that we're involved in a lifelong process, and, you know, that's the only way it works. You got any comments on that?
Yeah, I do. Some time ago, that would have really bothered me, this whole idea of a lifelong process, because I think a lot of us like to think, well, I want to be better in a month, you know, and then I can graduate, you know. And accepting that it is a long, lifelong process can take time. But when you start seeing results, when some sort of a defect is removed or lessened, it gives you a lot of encouragement, and you do want to continue, and you want to keep getting better and better, and removing whatever defects you have. But it was a struggle for me, I would say maybe 6 or 7 years ago, you know, this idea of lifelong process. What? I want to graduate and move on. But, it is a long, it's tough.
Yeah.
Seeing progress helps. I like what they do in AA, where they'll basically do a run through the 12 steps in a fairly short time on something.
Yeah.
And I think that gives people hope that something can change.
Yeah.
And then the whole idea of a lifelong process, well, I want this. I want this lifelong process. Yeah. I want to keep getting better.
Mm-hmm. And you have to get with the people who have gotten better too, don't you?
I mean,
the with, you know, the 10, 5, 10, 20, 30 year veterans of sobriety, if you will, and as we know, when we talk sobriety, that can be emotional sobriety. It doesn't have to be sober from booze or drugs. It can also be, I have an underlying mental illness, as do most addicts, codependents, and so on. It usually relates to either depression or anxiety or some combination of those two. That's who I am, and I'm working through it, and I know a lot of it has to do with character, and I've been made, I believe, by a creator of sorts, and to perform a function, to do a certain thing, to be a certain way in my life, and I'm just doing my best to conform it, to go along with that, as opposed to conforming to maybe what the world tells me I have to do. So, but it's definitely a lifelong process for me, and I think you're saying the same thing. And don't you find that recovery is contagious? I mean, when you start getting into it, when we start talking, we start sharing, you want to do more of it.
Yes.
As opposed to less, you know?
Yes, I do. It's an exciting journey.
Yeah,
when
is.
Things start to change.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it really becomes maybe the most important thing in your life is recovery.
Yeah. Well, it is, because if you don't recover you to the best you available, you're not your optimum for the others who you want to help. And, and if you really want to help someone, you got to be healthy when you, you know, have a healthy mindset when you head out. I remember reading a book by Henry Nouwen that had to do with binding his own wounds as he reached out to help someone else. And that's a key aspect. I mean, you'll always have wounds, but, patching them up and knowing they're going to get better as you head out, trudge the road, as I say, as you head out to make a difference in another life. And it's dramatic how the healing that you are used to help create in someone else heals your stuff. You know, like, it's amazing. And it's, many people, I think, get hooked on that aspect, you know, and I probably am one of them. I mean, this whole jail ministry to me is so exciting. I'd rather be in jail than anywhere else, practically. But momentarily, you know what I mean? Like, cause I get to leave and they don't. But I mean, the atmosphere in a room of, people who felt hopeless half an hour ago, who were smiling and laughing and feeling hope and joy for life, is you know, you can't explain it. You can't pay a psychiatrist, psychologist, therapist, counselor of any kind enough money to make that happen. But you go in there and you do this simple thing and that happens. You know, what's better? What's bigger than that? I don't know. You know?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I'll even get you in the jail before we're done. Oh, man. Let me read a little excerpt from what's called today's version. Anyway, it's called Master Plan. And the fellows who put the whole life recovery program together, David Stoop and Stephen Arterburn, also put out a book called Taking Your Life Back Day by Day. And this is today's reading in that one. And it's called Master Plan. It's day 211. And if you do the math, you'll find out that that's July 31st. It says here, and I'm just reading part of it. It says, you know, God the Builder has a master plan for your life that you're not privy to. It's important that you trust him. You know, and that is the issue we've been talking about underneath. You know, what is keeping us from trusting something greater than ourselves to help us through the journey? I mean, something created us. I mean, you know, accidents that created all this stuff that goes on is just way beyond anything I want to accept into my life. So, you know, and if you're on the same boat, you know, why is it so hard? Why is it so hard to, and why does this entity of power, of creator, of God, of whomever, of whatever, why is it so hard to trust that because we couldn't trust our fathers? Like, that bothers me, you know, it bothers the heck out of me. I don't have an answer. Do you have an answer?
I think it's, again, just a process. I grew up, yeah, like you said, I didn't trust my father, or basically the whole family is mm-hmm. the first group I knew, and there was a lot of trust issues with mm-hmm. that family.
Mm-hmm.
Like they say, you grow up with one major problem is don't trust, don't feel, and, you know, and you don't talk about anything. You're not authentic in that family, and that's the first group you know. So to trust anyone after that can be very difficult, because you learn from a very young age not to really mm-hmm. trust people and not to trust a higher power or God of your understanding.
Yeah.
It's just an ongoing issue. And again, I think God shows up when you need him.
Okay.
And it's those little, for me anyway, these little things that will happen when I need God in my life, and I can see he's there. That certainly helps with trust. But for me, I would say it's a process.
Yeah, and how much do you have to put up with it before your help arrives, right? I mean, it's, and those are the things, you know, if we believe in any sort of evil aspect, and there's some, a lot of stuff out there is pretty bad, and there's a lot of stuff that's pretty good, but the bad stuff would always be saying, yeah, you're right. You know, this doesn't work. How long do you think this can work for? You know, and you know what I mean? There's always that. Eh? There's, you know, there's like a bird on each shoulder. Or one's big and one's small. And, you know, which one are you going to give the power to, you know, the good one or the bad one? And I guess that's life. You know, it's the whole of life. It's that whole process. But being on the leading edge of relaying positive news of any kind to your fellow man, to people, to hurting people, to take your story, you know, and you've got a lot of stuff in your story, especially, that can really make a difference in a lot of lives, you know, and that's why I said to you on the way in here that, you know, our stories are so important. They're so important that, somebody has to hear one aspect, maybe a lot of people got to hear different aspects from your story, but if they don't hear them, they're not going to make it in this life, you know, and that's how crucial who we are and how we survived and how we lived day to day. That's why that is so important to get out there, to share wide, to make it a program for my life, you know, in your life. And And I know some of the things that you've told me, like you and your dad especially, and I'm thinking, wow, you know, it's a wonder I could even, never mind the show, just get you out of bed, you know what I mean? And And that's pretty amazing. And you're here and you're doing a phenomenal job, by the way, and of expressing pieces of the program that most will never understand. And those who listen intently will pick up bits and pieces, and they'll understand too that you're not a recovering addict, but you're someone who understands recovery is a part of life. And, you know, to the best of your ability, you're going to make the best out of your life, no matter what it feels like. Now, give me a few comments there, Brian, before we start thinking about wrapping up here.
Well, again, this is the seventh step. I think I just mentioned something here. I see this question: describe the difference between humiliation and humility, and you've talked a bit about it as well. I really have come to see humility as a strength, and that does take time. Because maybe you've suffered a lot of humiliation in your past. I know I have. And understanding that difference is really key to that step.
Mm-hmm.
When you basically understand that you can't do it on your own, you need God. And that's what humility is all about.
Yeah.
And it is a strength. You feel that strength when you're in that state of humility. You really feel it.
It's been interesting because you're saying, I've finally found a place where I can admit that I'm less than, you know, your God, your higher power, whatever, and still feel comfortable. I don't have to be better than. And you've said, your whole life had to be about, you know, look at all the diplomas and degrees and things that you've gone and earned just so you could feel a little better than the other guy, and it never helped at all, did it?
Yeah, I always had this attitude years ago, getting better, where, like, I call it living on the ladder.
Mm-hmm.
When going into the group, who's better than me, who am I better than? And the whole part of recovery is to accept that we're all the same.
Yeah.
We're all children of God, that's the way some people put it. And that that has a lot to do with humility, I think.
And we get to read this yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Once in a while we read it on the air here, but where we talk about the futility in spending our time in tomorrow and in yesterday. And in reality, that's where most of us spend the lion's share of our time. You know, the now, that thing between those two, between, you know, the last thing I did and the next thing I'm going to do, that little space in time is the most, or out of time, I guess, it's kind of between time, is the most peaceful, unchanging, stable place ever. And you know that it's always now. It's never tomorrow. It's never yesterday. It's never in 5 seconds. It's never 1 second ago. It's always now. But we're never here. how do we correct that? Well, you know, I think we focus on it. We remember. You know, we try to remember that, wow, now is great, you know. And if great can be great for 8, 10, 12 people in prison, some of them going away forever, then now is not so bad, you know. We can all do okay in the now. And I think maybe that's where we have to focus our future, is in now.
I think you're right, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. What can I do today?
Yeah.
What can I do today to make my life a little better and to help somebody else?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Yeah, because number one, I've got to rely on something. Number two, I've got to be healthy. And then I can take action to make a difference in another life. And I think with that, my friend, and you've been a wonderful guest here on Sharing the Burden, and I think we'll do an exit and see the folks next time. Thank you, Brian.
Thanks for having me here, Scott.
You're very welcome.